Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Seeds of Destruction when we come back. Well, biotech beans, chemical corn, frankenfish, and the pesticide potato. That's what's on the menu at your local neighborhood supermarket. And we're concerned that this technology is a serious threat to our health, to traditionally bred open pollinated seeds, and to the environment and the farmers that grow them. Listen to this quotation from the Chicago Tribune when they said, "We're being exposed to one of the largest uncontrolled experiments in the history of the world. In less than 5 years, these companies have flooded the marketplace with thousands of untested and unlabeled products containing foreign genetic material. These genetically modified organisms pose several real dangers because they have been engineered to create novel proteins that retard spoilage, produce their own pesticides against insects, or allow the plants to tolerate larger and larger doses of weed killers." And what's really scary is that this isn't from Tom Clancy's latest thriller. These seeds are already a major part of the U.S. corn and soybean crops. So what happens if one of these so-called suicide genes, which prevents seed saving, what if it goes haywire and destroys the entire U.S. corn crop? Or what if it turns out that genetically modified rice kills people? Or what if it causes genetic mutations or birth defects in people like thalidomide did back in the 1950s? Well, I don't want to take that risk, and I don't want to be a guinea pig in this ill-advised experiment, and I'm betting that you don't either. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, our $100,000 class is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I got an article here from the Environmental and Climate News. It's a pretty good newsletter. Comes out from a group called the Heartland Institute. They're located at 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903, Chicago, Illinois. And their zip code is 60603. Or they've got a fax here. Their fax number is 312-377-5000. You can fax their order blank. I don't have their real telephone number, but you got their fax number there. It's 312-377-5000. That'll get you started. Now, the Heartland Institute is a contrarian group. They're the ones that put out the information on global warming and scientific articles on typically the environment, ecology issues, cutting the 4,000 square miles of rainforest in the Amazon basin. And typically they take the opposite view from the environmentalists. So lest we should slight the environmentalists, we need to keep a balance in my view as to who's telling the truth and who's lying. Not everybody tells the truth all the time. Most people tell a little bit of the truth some of the time. But they mix a lot of truth and error most of the time. And so in the last two programs, I pointed out this thing of genetically modified organisms, GMOs, and they got an article here in the Heartland Institute Environment and Climate News, Australia will promote drought-resistant crops. And the article goes something like this. Agricultural Minister Tony Burke has announced that Australia will promote the development of drought-resistant genetically modified wheat, that's GM wheat. And Burke said Prime Minister Kevin Rudd supports the idea of improving the drought tolerance of crops as an alternative to continuing the current system of insurance and financial disaster relief for Australian farmers. Such relief has cost the Australian government more than $3 billion since 2001. So, Agricultural Minister Tony Burke has announced Australia will promote the development of drought-resistant genetically modified wheat. Now, here in the United States, we've been promoting that for many years, and, of course, the Food and Drug Administration, the Department of Agriculture, the administration, both Clinton and Bush, have been promoting it, along with the big manufacturers of the seeds, you know, that's Monsanto and DuPont, Synergy and others. And we haven't been able to get it off the ground here in this country, so they're going to shift the operation to Australia. They've got to get this thing nationally supported someplace and get this thing going. I mean, these guys have been working on this project since the end of World War II, and what they've been working on, I reported in the last program, they're working on famine. Famine. They are trying to promote a famine worldwide. They are going to starve to death 6 billion people on planet Earth. And, of course, those that they can't starve to death are going to kill with disease. And in the last report, I pointed out that, hey, listen, you know, once this process gets started, you know, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt, and let's assume that killing 6 billion people and reducing the useless eaters from off the face of the Earth is a good idea. They used to call it eugenics. Now they call it genetics. I suppose it's a great, great idea. How do you get it stopped once you get the process started? You know, once you start starving people, I guess you can reverse the process by feeding them. But you see, the way we're getting this famine started is with genetically modified organisms. And this GMO genie is out of the jar. It isn't a case of if it gets out of the jar. It's already out of the jar. And the guys that have been planting this GMO have already got this GMO seed and pollen into the natural environment. Hell, it's already there, kids. They had corn, you know, they had clean corn down in Mexico. Hell, the corn has been sullied by the GMO strains. Now, you can sit there and say, you know, most of the people that are sitting there defending GMOs are the people that live in the cities. They're not corn growers. They're not agronomists. So, you know, you get city people, and they're enamored by technology. They're enamored by science. Some of us old guys, you know, we're sitting out here saying, excuse me, but that isn't the way that works. And so as a result of that, I pointed this out last time, you know, we went from the bow and arrow to the gun and then to the nuclear bomb. And each one of these is a technological innovation, and it produces more efficiency. You can kill people faster. And this GMO thing over here, they're telling us that what they're going to do is they're going to feed more people. Now, if you subscribe to the agribusiness model, when they say that you cannot feed the world, you can't grow enough food organically in the agribusiness model, these guys aren't lying. They're telling you the truth. I don't deny it. There ain't no way in hell you can feed 6.5 billion people on planet Earth using the agribusiness model that has been employed by big business and big government since the end of World War II. It calls for monoculture. It calls for chemical fertilizers. It calls for sprays. It calls for fewer farmers and bigger economic units. Now, I'm going to throw a thought out to you. Let's take 10,000 acres. Would you rather have one college-trained, smart, well-financed farmer farming 10,000 acres, producing your food for you? Or would you rather have 10,000 little independent farmers, never been to college, never been trained in agriculture, don't have any scientific or technological background at all of them farming little economic units of 1 acre or less, producing your food for you? Mull that one over. Now, if you're from the city, you probably voted for the one farmer. If that one farmer makes a mistake on his 10,000 acres, you may not have a crop this year. But if you got 10,000 farmers out there producing, you can rest assured that 10,000 of them aren't going to make the same mistake. 10,000 of them are going to be farming in 10,000 different ways on 10,000 different pieces of ground. And when you get all done, you're going to get 5, 6, 7,000 of them are going to have something coming off of it. Furthermore, each man only has 1 acre, and he's going to get the maximum off of that 1 acre. And when we farm with tractors and big machines, you know, we get produce per acre, but we only get 10, 15% of what an acre could produce. I pointed that out to you last time. So my vote is for agriculture as opposed to agribusiness. My vote is for open pollinated seeds rather than hybrid seeds. And my vote is for biblical agriculture rather than the GMOs and the advanced technology of Monsanto and the United States Department of Agriculture. Now, that's just the way I am, and that's my thinking. Now, listen up, and I'll tell you why. In Australia, is in the middle of a seven-year drought that has left the nation with extremely low water availability in many areas. In early 2007, there were promising rains, but rainfall was relatively scarce later in the year. The first ever Australian field trials of genetically modified wheat will take place in Victoria this year. The trials will include 30 genetically modified wheat hybrids, which contain genes for drought tolerance derived from maize, thale cross, moss, or yeast. Now, that's a bag to draw from. Now, to date, there is no known drought-tolerant wheat or other field crop with significant nutritional or food value. Let me underline that. To date, there is no known drought-tolerant wheat or other field crop with significant nutritional or food value. So when you breed out these plants so that they're drought-resistant, or they will grow with less water is what that means, there isn't any of those varieties that are known to have any significant nutritional or food value. So you're eating foodless food. Now, boys and girls, the only purpose for food is to transmit nutrition into your body. What we're trying to do is to get nutrients. We're trying to get vitamins and minerals and proteins into your body because your body needs food to live. So if we feed your body with food that does not have these nutrients in it, what do you think the result's going to be? mull it over a little bit. Now, the answer is you get sick, you get diseased. If you don't have enough vitamin C, boys and girls, you get scurvy. If you don't have enough Laetrile, vitamin B17, you get cancer. All right, now understand that. So now they say, well, we're going to give you drought-resistant GM wheat seed, which is nutritionally deficient. Now, the jury is in as far as genetic modified crops go. They've been around for more than 10 years. There have been no adverse events. National Farmers Federation of Australia spokesman Brett Hefferman told the French press agency. All right, now here's a guy. He comes along. His name is Brett Hefferson. And he told the French press agency these words. He said, the jury is in as far as genetically modified crops go. They've been around for 10 years, and there have been no adverse events. Unquote. Boys and girls, since the flood, man's been here for 4,400 years. And we've been farming with open pollinated seeds. And we've been using natural organic modalities, and we have had 4,400 years with no adverse events. And these boys have been farming for 10 years, and they say, well, what we need to do is to shift over to GMOs. Now, they want to match up their 10 years of experience with 4,400. And I say, that's not a very good match. And hell, I've never been to math school. I'm not any great magician with math, you know. I'm not a Rhodes Scholar. It looks like to me 10 over 4,400 don't amount to a row of pins. Hefferman emphasized Australian farmers will support crops that thrive in high temperatures with little water. Well, I guess if I was living in a drought zone, I'd probably be a hell of a lot more prone to support this experiment. Don't you think we ought to ask the question, how come you're having a drought? Did it ever occur to anybody that maybe this drought has a cause? Maybe there's a cause and effect relationship? Now, the creator of the universe, you know, the God of the Bible, you know, he said, I'm gonna punish you people down there in Australia. I'm gonna kick your hindies because you won't practice my law and perform on our contract, and I'm gonna give you drought. So I just wanted to point that out, that there's a guy here that says, I'm the guy that's handing you the drought, and so the farmers are saying, to hell with God, we ain't listening to that crap. We're gonna develop some GMO seeds and go out and farm where there's no water. Take your drought and shove it, God. That's the attitude, I guess, that you Australians have down there. I want to remind you Aussies down there, look north on the map. Look north. What do you see up there? I see 1.3 billion Chinese up there, and I see 30 million Australians. Always tuck that one away in your heart, because your God now tells you that he's going to destroy you from off the land. Now, pay attention. Henry Miller, he's a former U.S. Food and Drug Administration official. That's an FDA. Here in the United States, we call that the FDA. Henry Miller, he's a former FDA administration official and currently a fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, said, quote, this proposed search for better drought tolerance by genetic modification enjoys a positive, long-standing consensus among scientists. That's a lie. That's not true. And it doesn't make it true just because this guy happens to be a former U.S. Food and Drug Administration official or that he is a fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. In fact, when you hear quotations like that, you can almost bet that it's going to be a lie. Not always, but almost. Gene splicing is essentially an extension and refinement of earlier techniques for genetic plant modification. Miller noted the use of genetically modified crops is worldwide and has reduced famine and hunger in the third world. That's another lie. GMOs are so new, they haven't even been used in the third world to alleviate famine, and the third world people won't even eat the crap if they don't have to. I mean, these guys have to be starving to death, and even then they say we don't want it. So to say that it alleviates famine is nonsense. Well, it's worse than nonsense. It's a damn lie. Hasn't done it yet. Now, that's what they're advertising. That's what they're telling us that it's going to do. This proposed search for better drought tolerance by genetic modification enjoys a positive, long-standing consensus among scientists, so says Henry Miller, fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. That's a part of the hype that goes along with this process, selling it. We've got to sell it to you people. And who's going to buy it? Well, all the people in the city are going to buy it. Hell, they don't know any different. Now, there's some government roadblocks here. Gregory Conco, a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, noted, Australia's national government showed leadership in overcoming a patchwork of local roadblocks. In Australia, the provinces have generally been antagonistic to GM crops. Some provinces have imposed moratoriums on GM food crops, although GM cotton has been allowed in two provinces, Conco said. Conco agrees gene technology can benefit farmers and consumers. Everywhere in the world that they have been planted, bioengineered crops have benefited farmers, consumers, and the environment, said Conco. That's a damn lie. That isn't true. Where it's been used in India, it has been a total failure. It has brought financial ruin to nearly every farmer who's tested or tried GM in India. It has been a total failure there. Now, I don't know where else it's been a total failure, but it has been in India. And he says everywhere in the world that they have been planted. Didn't work for that guy I reported to you. The last program in Germany, it killed all of his cows. There are no good reports that I've seen in scientific studies of GMOs. And the only guys that are promoting it are the guys that are selling it and profiting from it. The people that have experimented with it and tested it have found out it didn't work. Now, that's the report that I have. Next, the only reason for hunger and malnutrition in the world at this point is politics and corrupt governments. That's true. Boy, that's the truth. And the agricultural developments of the past 30 years have created a tremendous benefit. Well, I don't know. That's a statement that may have some truth to it and may not. The agricultural developments of the past 30 years. Well, what agricultural developments are you talking about? Some do, some don't. GMOs haven't. There may be some that have. I wouldn't dispute it. Now, what we see here in this article put out here now by the Environment and Climate News, this is a very pro-GMO article. And this is a pretty good Environment and Climate News, a pretty good magazine. These people are city people from Chicago, and they don't know any different. And they're pretty pro, when we're talking about agriculture and experimentation and Department of Agriculture and Science and Technology, they're pretty well on board. Now, here's another article in here I wanted to share with you. It's an analysis, the Environment and Climate News analysis. And they say Greenpeace farming plan would reap environmental havoc around the world. So they're anti-Greenpeace. So am I. I'm anti-Greenpeace. But I don't think that this article here does anybody a benefit. In fact, I think the article, like the last one here, the one on GMOs, is skewered with lies and false science. And here's the point I want to make. There isn't any publication anywhere that I've ever seen that is 100% true, accurate, and correct. I mean, you can sit there and say, well, God, that Rush Limbaugh, he's a great guy, and I really love him. And Rush Limbaugh, every now and again, you know, he comes up with a little truth, and he mixes it with a little lies, and he mixes the mash together, and you come up with a false conclusion. Sometimes you get truth plus truth equals truth, and sometimes you get error plus error equals error, and sometimes you get truth plus error, which equals error. And this paper here does the same thing. And so what I'm trying to do here is figure out, well, where's the truth and where's the error, and how do we sort the two out? And so I go to the Bible and I say, well, let's see. God told us not to hybridize cattle, not to hybridize seed. So we got that authority, says don't do that. It's bad for you. Then I take a look at the Australian government over here, and the Australian government says that they want to try this GMO over here because over the past few years, this Burke said Prime Minister Kevin Rudd supports the idea of improving the drought tolerance of crops as an alternative to continuing the current system of insurance and financial disaster relief for Australian farmers. So I thought, well, let's underline that. Why do we have a system of insurance and financial disaster relief for farmers in the first place? Why is the government involved in farming to start with? Well, we have government from the top down. We have a communist philosophy. We're practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. In a biblical free enterprise economy, in an agriculture economy, the government would not be involved with these 10,000 farmers. And that was the problem that they discovered after World War II with agriculture. And that is, the world was full of, and especially the United States was full of little farmers, millions of little farmers that were uncontrollable using open pollinated seed. They saved their seed back from year to year, and you couldn't control the critters. So they needed a policy. They needed to get the little farms into stronger and stronger hands. So they started with, in the 1930s, they started with these agricultural adjustment acts, and they had these government programs. Now, God in the Bible has a little something to say about these government programs. It's over in Ezekiel chapter 18. I'm going to give you an insider's view here of Ezekiel chapter 18, where it talks about eating upon the mountains. A mountain in Bible prophecy, if you take a look at the word mountain completed out, you'll see that it's a nation, it's a government, it's an entity. And he talks about this thing of eating upon the mountains. It's in chapter 18, Ezekiel chapter 18. And he talks about two groups of people. He says there are people who are righteous, and there are people that are wicked. And if you've got a wicked guy over here, and he says the soul that sinneth, it shall die. And he says, now, lo, if this guy begets a son that seeth all of his father's sins, which he has done, and considers and doeth not such like, and has eaten upon the mountains, neither has lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, hath not defiled his neighbor's wife. Notice, has not eaten upon the mountains. So one of the first things that they needed to do was to get the farmers to depend upon government by getting the farmers to eat upon the mountains, to take the welfare benefits that the government was offering. It's a guardian-ward relationship, and they did. They've done the same thing with the people of the nations. Hell, they've got welfare programs everywhere in the world. They have turned people who used to be self-reliant and able to feed, clothe, and house themselves on their own little farms. They've turned them now into welfare recipients, eating upon the mountains, depending upon the government gifts and giveaways, eating out of the government trough, which is strictly prohibited here in the scripture. So if the Australian farmers weren't eating upon the mountains, then the government wouldn't be involved in the wheat issue to begin with, would they? So then the government wouldn't be promoting genetically modified seed, which is the government agenda. So what happens here is that the big multinational corporations want to drive the little farmers out of business. In order to do that, we've got to get the little farmers dependent upon the government. And the government says, well, we're here to protect the little farmers. No, they're not. That's a damn lie. The real motivation is to destroy agriculture and replace it with agribusiness. That means we have to destroy the little farmers. But we can't come out here with a policy that says, vote for the Democrats. We're here to destroy the little farmers. That isn't going to sell. So what you got to do is say, well, we're the Democrats, and we're here to help the little farmers. Oh, now we can get you to vote for us. So the political parties say, well, we're here to help the little farmers. They're not. They're here to help agribusiness, Monsanto, and DuPont, and others. Not the little guys. They're there to help the big guys. Now, the big guys are in cahoots with the Department of Agriculture, the big banks, the big seed companies. And they're in the process of taking those 10,000 little farmers on 1 acre that are practicing agriculture off of the land and replacing them with one guy who has been trained at the University of California at Davis and has 600 horsepower and has all the farms and the tractors and the financing of agribusiness behind him to replace those 10,000 little guys and shift those guys over into the city working in the factories so that we can control the food production. Hell of a lot easier to control one technocrat than it is 10,000 individual free-thinking farmers. So if we're going to control food in the world, we got to get it out of the hands of little guys. We have to destroy agriculture and replace it with agribusiness. So far, it's worked like a shot. They've done that. That's already done, past tense. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law our website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the website as well. The law hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour, an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. You can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the Heartland Institute Climate News. It's called Environment and Climate News. They had an article in here on Greenpeace farming plan would reap environmental havoc around the world. The Greenpeace people are advocating small farms and agriculture. So the environment and climate news, they're supporting, they're advocating agribusiness, two different agricultural models. I support the Greenpeace model of the agriculture. Agriculture is what we call mixed farming, little farms where a guy's got an orchard, he gets some of his income from maybe a fruit, maybe he's got some berries, maybe he's got 10 cows. That's been replaced in the United States. In fact, it's been replaced pretty much around the world with monoculture and agribusiness, where one farm, instead of being 50 acres with five or six products, it's 500 acres and it has just one product. The guy produces corn. The guy has a dairy. He produces milk. The guy raises spinach, or maybe he's got strawberries. That's all he does is strawberries. And he's good at it. And he raises these strawberries with chemicals and sprays. And this is called the agribusiness model. It's a business model. And the agribusiness business model does not aim at producing lots of food per square foot, like Rodale's square foot garden. They advocate producing lots of food per man hour or per man unit. And boy, do they shine. I mean, they really work. For instance, here in America, I had a guy come in here one day. He was a wheat farmer from North Dakota, and he was farming 15 sections. Now, I'm a farmer. Let me tell you, that's a fur piece, 15 sections. You know how big that is? 15 sections. Well, there's 640 acres in a section. A section is 1 square mile. That's a mile on four sides. That's a piece of ground where you drive a mile, and then you turn to the right. And you drive a mile, and you turn to the right. And then you drive a mile, and you turn to the right. And then you drive a mile, and you're back to where you started. That's 4 miles to drive around this piece of property. Inside that 4 miles, there's 640 acres. Now, if you take 640 times 15, that's 9,600 acres. That's 9,600 acres. That's one farmer, one wheat farmer. Now, it used to be in this country, we had 160 or 320 acres. That's a quarter of a section or a half a section. And we homesteaded that, and a family lived on it, and they produced wheat, or they produced a crop, or they produced several crops, and they made their living, and it supported a whole family. Today, one family who goes out, now take that 9,600. So we could divide that by four. And that would be 2,400. So let's try it this way. If you had four people to a section, that's four families on a section, that would be 160 acres each. And you had four times 15 sections, you'd have 60 families living on that same piece of real estate. 60 families with mothers and fathers and children who would all be out there working on that 9,600 acres. They would produce about 10 times more total food off of that 9,600 acres than that one farmer is going to produce. And that's because when you're farming a smaller piece of ground, you give it more attention and you get more per acre. One guy with 160 acres is going to produce more than one guy who has 10,000 acres. That's not more total, that's just more per square foot. A guy by the name of Rodale, who experimented with this up in Pennsylvania, they went out and they did a thing called square foot gardening. And they took a third of an acre, this is back in the 1970s, one third of an acre. How many square feet is that? 43,560. Divided by three, that's 14,520 square feet. So about 15,000 square feet, round numbers, round it off here a little bit. And they produced $28,000, $28,000 worth of produce off of one-third of an acre in 1 year. And that's because you can get more than one crop. You know, in certain places, you could get two crops of corn. It takes 120 days to produce corn. You get 240 days if you got right after it. Corn farmers don't put in two crops. They get one. Agribusiness can't get two crops. They can only get one. And when you're growing tomatoes, same thing. You know, they plant the tomatoes, and they go out there, and they harvest the tomatoes. I've seen tomato plants. They'll produce, you know, a tomato plant produces tomatoes all year long. And as you pick the tomatoes, more blossoms come out and more tomatoes grow. I've seen tomato plants that would produce 80 pounds of tomatoes off of one plant. They don't do that commercially. They plant a field of tomatoes. They go in and harvest it, kills all the plants, and they take one crop of tomatoes. That's it. Instead of harvesting the tomatoes, you know, all year long, that's another thing. So you got frost, and so oftentimes people will put tomatoes in a greenhouse. You can't do that commercially. It isn't viable. But you can do it if you're a little guy and you're trying to produce tomatoes for a niche market in January in Philadelphia or Chicago. You can do it. All right, so the Rodale, practicing French intensive culture, they called it, could produce $28,000 off of 14,520 feet. So divide 14 into 28, and that's about 2. So you got 14,000 feet producing $28,000. That's about $2 per square foot. Now let me translate that out. If you had 43,560 times two, you'd be making $87,000 an acre per year. Now, one guy on a little small piece of ground can produce 87,000. Now, that's a record. Now, we teach a class here on how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. Rodale did it almost, not quite, but he produced $87,000 on a third of an acre. That's almost $100,000 an acre. That's pretty phenomenal. Now, by contrast, you know, just take the average wheat farmer out here in North Dakota. Dry land wheat gets about 30 bushels to the acre. 30 bushels today is worth $26 a bushel. So at today's inflated price of 26 times $30 a bushel, you get $780 an acre, which is phenomenal. A few years ago, he was getting $4 a bushel. So you take 4 times 30, and he was making 120. There's a big difference between 120 or 780 and $87,000 an acre. Now, I don't know how many people can be supported here in the world, but it's more than 6.5 billion. And so when somebody comes along and says organic farming won't work, if you're talking about organic farming in a agribusiness business model, you're right, it won't. Commercial farmers, one guy with 9,600 acres, he cannot feed very many people with organic agriculture. He has to have chemicals, no doubt about it. But if you divide that land up and you give it to 60 families and let them practice organic agriculture, they can produce many times more or much more off of that land than can one man. How much more? Well, the rule of thumb is about 10, about 10 to 1. So I pointed that out, I think, in the last program that in Russia, when they had this problem come up, so you got the big state farms, you know, thousands and thousands of acres, very efficient, make a lot of money. But they couldn't feed the people of Russia, so they gave all the peasants 1/2 acre, and the peasants produced half the food in the country on their 1/2 acre plots. So I just extrapolated that out and said, if you want to double food production in Russia, you know, it's a hell of a lot easier to give those peasants another 1/2 acre than it is to double millions of acres of land which are in these big big corporate farms. I mean, you can't go out here and double 9,600 acres and give some guy 10,000, but, you know, you could give the workers on that farm 1/2 acre. Just take a little patch of ground, give it to them. And that's because the productivity off of small plots is so much greater. That's why in the Nile Valley they can produce more food than anybody else in the world off of 1 acre of ground. Higher productivity per acre is not equivalent to higher productivity per man. Here in America, where farmers have 600 horsepower, the average, that is, the average farmer has 600 horsepower at his disposal. Well, now a new report from Greenpeace International called Cool Farming includes organic farming recommendations that would impose severe hunger on half the world's humans or force the clearing of the world's remaining forests to plant more low-yield crops. The report was released on January 8th, around the same time that Arcadia Biosciences of Davis, California, announced a set of new genetically engineered seed varieties that will radically reduce greenhouse gas emissions and water pollution from world crop production. All right, so they're saying, gee, we need more GMO crops because we can reduce greenhouse gases. Excuse me, this same Heartland Institute that I cited here in a series of programs, if you'll remember, on global warming, they told us that greenhouse gases were good for us. That was the same paper, the same Heartland Institute, in their article on global warming, said that this carbon dioxide greenhouse gas is good and beneficial. And now they're citing an organization called the Arcadia Biosciences of Davis, California, announced a new genetically engineered variety that will radically reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Why would we want to do that? Why don't we want to increase the greenhouse gas emissions if they're good for us? And I think Heartland was right. In their previous article, they said CO2 is good for the environment. Global warming is good for the environment. And we go through these periodic periods, and they cited, I thought, very, very eloquently in their story on the global warming hoax, and I reported that to you. That came from Heartland. So it looks like they're working at cross purposes, and oftentimes that's what we see in these publications, is you get one article, and it tells us a story, then you get another article, and it works across purposes with article number one. So what am I supposed to believe? Let me give you an illustration. I'm a pretty prolific reader, and I'm reading a story here about evolution. And they tell me that the dinosaurs disappeared from planet Earth in an asteroid explosion on the Yucatan Peninsula 65 million years ago. I wasn't here 65 million years ago, so I missed the event. None of those people were here 65 million years ago either, and they really don't know what the hell they're talking about. So let's assume, because they wear the title scientist, that they must know, because they got letters after their names, that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. We'll give them that one. Now we read another article over here, and it tells us that the sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. So we read that article, and we'll presume that they know what they're talking about. I don't. I cannot tell you that the sun is burning up at 5 feet an hour. I don't know if it's 5 feet an hour, 5 feet a day, 5 feet a week, 5 feet a month, 5 feet period, or ain't burning up at all. I don't know. The hell do I know? So Will Rogers once observed, says, all I know is what I read in the papers. So I'm just reporting to you what I read in the papers. So I'm going to give them their due, and I'm going to say, well, a guy went to college. He's got a degree after his name. He's been watching the sun. He must know what he's talking about. All right, so the sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Now, we're assured that there's no God. Evolution is the power that is in control of the universe. And that also comes from science. And I say, well, okay, this guy's been to college. He's got letters after his name. He tells me there is no God. Evolution is the order of the day. And uniformitarian geology is the model by which we are going to make our measurements. Now, remember, you and I were just casual observers reading the paper. Okay, remember what we've read so far? 65 million years ago, the dinosaurs died out because an asteroid hit the Yucatan Peninsula. The sun is burning up at 5 feet an hour. We read that in the paper. And we say, well, that must be true. The scientists told us that. And then they come along and they say, there is no God. We evolved from green slime. And therefore, uniformitarianism is the order of the day. So let's buy into the dinosaurs, uniformitarianism, and the sun is burning up at 5 feet an hour. All right, if the sun is burning up at 5 feet an hour, you go 5 times 24 hours in a day, and that'll tell you how much it's burning up in a day. Multiply that times 365, and that tells you how many feet a year. All right, now, let's go back 100,000 years. And if we took 5 feet a day times 365 days times 100,000 years, we would find that the sun would be double its present diameter. That is, the sun would be, oh, instead of 750,000 miles in diameter, it would be 1.5 million. All right, so far so good. But if we multiplied that times 20 million, we would find that the sun would be 93 million miles in diameter. Now, it just happens that the distance from the Earth today to the sun is 93 million miles. So that means that 20 million years ago, the sun was 93 million miles in diameter, assuming, of course, that there is no God, evolution is the order of the day, and uniformitarianism is the model that we're going to use. That's what I learned when I went to school. Now, it's pretty obvious that scenario couldn't work. That scenario couldn't work. Just 20 million years ago, there would be no sun, or there'd be no Earth. There wouldn't be a Mercury, Venus, or Earth. And there probably wouldn't be a Mars either, but because the diameter of the sun would be 93 million miles. That's how far it is from the Earth to the sun today. So now, what does that do to the story that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago? Well, that's obvious poppycock. That couldn't have happened. So just by using the models and doing the arithmetic, we can see that it doesn't work. I mean, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar. You don't have to be a mathematician or a math genius. Hell, if your IQ is anything above 80, you've got to be able to figure that out. If you're in the third grade and you can read a newspaper, for crying out loud, you can figure that out. And that's all I'm doing here. Now, Greenpeace farming plan would reap environmental havoc around the world. I read a paragraph here that's an exact opposite loggerheads with what this same publication printed in the last issue of their paper that I reported on to you when we were talking about global warming. Now, in the Bible, we find that there's a standard. It says, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. If you can get two or three witnesses to agree, you all come up with the same numbers, it's probably got some merit. If you get somebody, you know, get three guys to do the same math problem and you get three different answers, well, it's pretty obvious that somebody's wrong. In fact, two guys out of three are probably wrong, and it could be all three guys out of three could be wrong. It could be some fourth answer. So we can't believe everything that we read. I don't believe everything that I read from the environment and climate news, and this is one paragraph I had to discount. I don't believe everything I see from Greenpeace, and that's because they've got errors in them. But come on, guys, when we see the errors, you know, we ought to identify it and say, uh-oh. Now they go on to make another observation here. Growers of Arcadia's new rice will need only half as much nitrogen fertilizer, and virtually all of the nitrogen applied will be taken up by the plants. Arcadia is working with a Chinese province to offer United Nations-approved carbon offsets for encouraging Chinese farmers to plant Arcadia's new nitrogen-efficient biotech rice seeds. The world uses 80 million tons of industrial nitrogen per year, and the crops typically take up only half of it. Now, the rest may leach into streams or go into the air as nitrous oxide, a greenhouse gas 300 times as potent as carbon dioxide, CO2. In rice alone, the new seed variety could ultimately prevent emission of 100 million tons per year of nitrous oxide. Well, look, instead of giving 10,000 acres to one rice farmer using GMO seed, why don't we give that land to 60 or 100 or 200 little guys who aren't going to use any nitrogen fertilizer at all? They're going to use natural fertilizers. Why don't we take it a step further and practice land Sabbaths and Jubilees, which is what our Creator told us, and then the soil fertility will never deteriorate, and we don't need any fertilizers at all. That's right. Did you know that if you use land Sabbaths, you don't need any fertilizers at all? The seventh year fertilizes it for the next six. Now, that's a program that was set out by the designer of agriculture. Then we don't need nitrogen fertilizer. We don't need sprays. The insects don't affect plants because insects don't eat plants that have all of their nutrients in them. They only eat nutrient-deficient plants, and then we don't need the spray. I'm telling you, kids, there's a wild new concept out here revealed in the Bible by the designer of the machine, the engineer that made the machine. I know it's a wild new idea, but I just thought I'd throw it out there for your consideration. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We're going to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. Of course, so until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.